Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Rosie O'Donnell, and we are in November. Can you believe that? We're in November, and my kiddo thinks it's very funny to say that Thanksgiving is the middle child between October and Christmas. That's what they said to me last night. I'm like, I suppose that is true. So we lost Matthew Perry, and you know, I was lucky enough to get to know him during COVID when we both were in a group that, you know, got together and Zoomed, and we're still together, the group. And we check in the morning and at night. And so it was a privilege to get to know him and to love him and to watch him fight so hard, you know, for his health in every way. And he's a champion. He's a champion. And so many of us, nearly all of us, have someone that we love who struggles with addiction, a disease of addiction. And it's so easy to just say they lack the willpower. They are somehow morally corruptible. It's just a lie, you know? It's just a lie. It's a disease. And I think his body had just had enough, you know. Read his book. It's beautiful. That's what I can say. Read his book. And he was a beautiful, beautiful man. He was an amazing man. And that book tells you all about who he is from, you know, his own heart. Yeah, onward, onward. What do you do? It's so hard when you lose a friend, and especially when somehow the friend is younger than you. It's hard for me to believe that so much has changed since I was a kid, and so much hasn't. I remember being horrified at the war in Vietnam, and it was on TV, and I was a little kid. I couldn't get away from it, so I stopped watching the news, and I kind of have to do that now. Self-preservation, you know, stay informed, but don't overload all your circuits all the time and try to fix things that are not ours to fix, right? As they say in all the AA programs, the wisdom to know the difference, right? The things I can and cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. But I'm inspired by so many people, and that's what I'm trying to now just absorb, stay present. I'm in my life. I'm a grown up. I'm here. This is happening. We've gotten through all the other tough days. We'll get through these, you know. I have no answers. Nobody has the answers other than, you know, survive today, survive tomorrow. But I don't have any answers, and I know everybody's in pain and everybody's raw, and I'm respecting everyone's need for peace right now, including my own, you know. Yeah. We have a good show, really good show. A friend of mine, Cheryl Dunier, who is a world-renowned African-American director, writer, and actor. And we met on the set of American Gigolo. She was a guest director. But I knew of her from her very first film, Watermelon Woman, which was a groundbreaking self-produced movie that opened a whole new genre in film. And sometimes you don't know something is missing until someone shows it to you. And that's kind of what Watermelon Woman did, just one woman's quest to be truly represented on film. And it's now part of the permanent collection of cinema at the Museum of Modern Art. Yes, MoMA has chosen Watermelon Woman as part of their permanent collection. And that's pretty amazing. One note, when we taped this, it was right after the writer's strike had ended, and we had very high hopes that SAG-AFTRA was going to end right away, but we are still fighting for the good fight, stronger than ever. We can hold on, SAG and AFTRA, and I'm so proud of you, Fran Drescher, the president of Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, and I love you very much, and I'm so proud of how you're standing tall and fighting for all of us. But right now, here we are, me and my friend, Cheryl Dunier. Hey, Cheryl Dunier, how are you?
I am blessed and happy and happy to be here with you.
Yeah, you know, very good to see you. Mm-hmm. We got to work together on American Gigolo and ill-fated, discombobulated show that mm-hmm. you and I were there when they sort of tore it in half and started saying, do this, do that, work without a script. But we got through it and we became friends. Good to see you.
Onward we went.
Yes, we did.
We went right through that. And, you know, it was, shows can be hard, really can be hard. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that things are being renegotiated right now and have landed in favor of the people who really bring shows to life, who are, you know, the directors, the actors, fingers crossed that works out, as well as the writers, you know.
It was so shocking to me to hear that the AMPTP thought they could do without the people who create the things they sell. It shocked me, right? I thought, well, surely you're not going to be able to robot this auto room. You know what I'm saying? How did they think they would be able to do it without the ingredients that you need in the soup?
I have no idea. It is all about capitalism. It is all about the money. But for us, it's about talent. So, and here I am with the talented Rosie.
And you, the talented you. I mean, you had a big crossroads in your life where you were about to become a tenured professor and you got the bug of doing and directing episodic TV shows, right? And is it true that the school said to you, pick, kiddo?
Yes. That was a big crossroad time. I had just moved to the Bay Area and had been living here for about 5 years. I was in LA. I said, you know, FLA, let me move up here and be with the people and find work and get a job as an academic, finally just land instead of trying to dance between two worlds. And I was just really going to go down that path. But we started, you know, the bug happened. I started to get the itch and made some shorts that went around and then, you know, got into the academy. That really was the magic moment when I got into the academy with that first wave of new directors that came in and met Ava DuVernay. Who was doing Queen Sugar. And, you know, the rest is history there. She said, you know, do you want to be on the show? I said, yes. And, you know, my school said no.
And, right away.
I was like, bye.
Yeah, see ya. Wouldn't want to be ya.
Right. So.
And was it a decision that you wrestled with, or was it really, well, I got to go? This is what I have to
do. I think it was a wrestling for me, and in particular that I was at this crossroad of a moment, and so was the program. And I was thinking, well, this could be a great way to bring this to the film program at San Francisco State University. And I'll name them. And it didn't work into what they really had me there to do, which was teach, because there's a lot of students there. I mean, I had classes of like 100, 150 students for intro to, filmmaking and video. And I'm walking on front, doing my little Oprah hour. But state universities are not funded so well. I think it goes back to the bigger thing. And so these classes are huge. And a lot of the younger, faculty end up, regardless of their talent, doing things that aren't like sitting in a lab and, dealing with, negotiating to make the program bigger. They have to just teach the bare bones. And I just was ready to not do that again.
Where did you grow up, Cheryl?
So I grew up in old Philadelphia, Philly. I was born in Liberia, grew up in Philly, and, was that little odd black girl, just like too wound up and knowing my little difference. So I was always out, there was never a minute of the closet for me except for playing hide and seek or being in my mama or something like that. I just never knew why not. So that was really...
Right, and do you think that was some kind of self-knowledge, or do you think that was unconditional love maybe that you had been... I mean, your family was accepting? They were not giving you any kind of pushback?
My father was sort of traveling a lot. So he was in Liberia or Boston or whatnot. So he was... sort of that part-time dad, but my mom was a full-time mom. I'll tell you that. Born in 1930 in Philadelphia, and had a whole other generation of, what it meant to be, raise their kids and move them a step forward. So she was doing that, but I had a whole bunch of other stuff there. So I was just on a different track. I was able to be that daughter for her, who, got good grades and, made those decisions. But I had my whole other, interior life, which became exterior, like playing in the street with kids. I remember, having fun with kids behind the bushes, and who my favorite at a very young age. So, there was a moment where those two things came together, I would say, and not a bad way. But it was time for me to go to college, and I literally was looking for the most queer place I could get into, or a lesbian place. And for some reason, I chose Michigan State, because that's where the I got a lesbian newsletter, and it said Michigan State was the best place to go because the Women's Music Festival was there, Michigan Women's Music Festival. I was like, that must be where lesbians are.
I want to go there. Yeah,
I want to go. And literally, when I got there, it was just a couple who had the, P.O. box, that sort of thing.
Whenever I get hate mail, I always think of that too. It's like three people in a studio apartment writing the letter,
And so I just, she had that talk with me, and she said, when you go and you're going to be there, make sure you find a good, boyfriend. And I said, well, hold on. What if it's a girlfriend? Well, whatever, and she just kind of rolled over it. And I think she knew. I think she just knew, and I was already a loud person, an extrovert, as they called us.
Right.
In those times. Right.
Well, that's, that's pretty ahead of her time for your mom, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm.
Yes, from that type of, black Philly girl, raised, in the Baptist way, turned Catholic, and just, real conservative Democrat, hard line, public school teacher.
That's like my family too, and Catholic, and but I never, there was never a discussion about me being gay, but I think my mother knew as well. Now, she died when I was 10 in 73, but right before she died, I signed up to play drums in school, and she would not let me because she said it was a boys thing and I didn't have to do so many boys things. So, you know, that was the first and only thing that I kind of remember or can pick out about that. You know, again, I was just a little kid. I was 10, but I was always like a tomboy. I always played all the sports. I always, you know, was loudmouth New York little spunky kid, you know?
Right, right.
And without a mother and without gender-defined roles in the household, you know, there came a freedom with that in some ways that I am, you know, not happy about. Obviously, I would rather have had my mother living and grown up with that kind of frame as I try to parent myself and my children now in my 60s. You know, it's something that you always look towards. Now, is your mom with us still, or is she passed?
My father passed. The African, he passed in the late 80s, and I was I don't know, maybe the one of the big girlfriends that I had at that time, like the first major girlfriend relationship. And I was just rediscovering my relationship with my father. And I think this is like 87. And she, you know, I'd come over to do laundry or something like that from college. I was now at Temple University in Philly and living, you know, around the city with, the
South
gangs.
Street.
South Street, the West Philly lesbians.
Joan Armour Trading was always playing there.
Joan, I mean, how many albums did I have? You know, how many
Every single Joan Armour Trading I had.
Every single. See her as much as I could, you know. I just really was just digging into that life. And we went over and she said, go give your dad a hug, you know, and I did. And the next day he died. But he was sort of like, my mom was the alpha. So I kind of followed in steps of that alpha, but with that, you know, daddy's little girl thing. And I think that really kept me on that, you know, the track of being somebody who followed their visions and drives. And her thing was love many, trust few, always paddle your own canoe. She said that to me all the time. I was like,
well, that is a great little saying. I never heard that. Love many, trust few, always paddle your own canoe.
Yeah.
That's pretty intense, really.
When I understood it, I understood it. And it was just like, all right, bye.
So 96, right when my show premiered, your feature film debut came out. The Watermelon Woman, which I remember vividly. It was so exciting to see a film about African-American lesbian women unabashedly in love, vibrant and real. It was the first time that I saw a movie like that. It was groundbreaking and award winning. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Now, The Watermelon Woman was my, you know, love child of lots of labor. I had been working on it, I as you would say, my whole life. But going back to that sort of coming out story, I wanted to tell a story that was about somebody who was already out. You know, there was a whole big coming out thing, even Go Fish, which was like sort of the big thing before me.
Yes.
Rose Trichet and Gwen Turner. And I was living in New York at that time, and that sort of, you know, little queer little baby dyke village of where I met, you know, somebody close to you, Lori Side. You know, we were all doing sort of activist fun stuff, living
queer artists, queer artists downtown. Yes.
Yep. Cultural producers at day and at night, you know what I'm saying? So I had to get in the game. I had to define myself in that timeline. And, you know, lucky for me, I was receiving a few grants. I had did a little gig at the New Museum as a director of a show called Bad Girls. It was all about women video artists who were doing comedy. So it was just, I had put myself in the scene, and I was just like, now's the time to do the story about Black lesbian, a narrative. Everybody's doing doc. I want to do a narrative. And so I looked up, you know, stories, ideas. You know, I couldn't find anything about Black lesbians in the Black film history timeline. And then I couldn't find anything about Black lesbians in the queer history timeline. Vita Russo's The Celluloid Closet. And so I just said, let me just make it up. You know, I have this history of, you know, background in video art and performance. And I'm comfortable in front of the camera. I did a lot of short video work. And so I played Cheryl, the video store employee, wannabe filmmaker, who I think it just became meta.
Right.
And there was enough there to make the sort of use video to tell that story, because I knew how to be on video cam. But then I had to sort of figure out film really quickly and become a screenwriter and wrote a narrative around Cheryl's romance and situation, which is meta for the situation I was in with my partner at the time, who was a white lesbian. And so it was great. It was really great. Put it out there, won the Teddy Award in Berlin, and, you know, invited to museums worldwide, but did not get the recognition in the, you know, the film, the independent film world, which was funny.
Right. Well, you are an outsider there, you know, mm-hmm. right? You who lives, who dies, who tells your story? If mm-hmm. no one's telling your story, there's no representation of you. How do you even find where you fit in the world, in the culture, in life, if your stories are not told? So this was a groundbreaking film, and mm-hmm. in a way, a mix of film, friends, and documentary all together at once. And, you know, when I saw Precious for the first time, I thought he's mm-hmm. done this as well. He's mm-hmm. taken a film and done it so raw and real that you think you're watching a documentary. Mm-hmm. It was like a docudrama, but not in the way we usually think of those two words together, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that was a really powerful, I mean, Lee is a, you know, he's also from Philly too, right?
Yeah.
Been in his presence too around that time of Precious, but yeah, it was important to show that I existed on my own terms, and that there was a world of Black lesbians that are just living, you know, normal funny life. You know, like
right.
everything's funny.
Yeah, to me too. Everything's funny. What's the other choice? That's what I right? ask you. What is the other choice? Yeah, now, how do you find now working in the confines of like the system, you know, mm-hmm. like when you come in, you're obviously an independent thinker, filmmaker, individual. You come in and have kind of the lanes be so defined for you that it almost limits your ability to drive naturally as you do, you know, artistically. Mm-hmm. And how do you find that? Because I thought it would be that you would go off and just become this independent film star making independence over and over. And instead you kind of took a different turn
right.
and you're in, you know, shows that The Fosters, which I was on, which you worked on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes notes from producers and a lot of involvement, you know, from other people. Mm-hmm. It's almost mm-hmm. like you're the artist and they're screaming more blue and you're like, shut up, I'm painting, you know?
Right. I love that. It's so funny. I don't know, you know, at this moment for me as a director on episodic television, it's very easy to, because I am the guest. Everybody else has been on the show for a long time. They know each other and have relationships from the crew to
right.
the producers to the cast, you know. And so a director just kind of flies in and is gone within 2 weeks and they're on to somebody else, you know, depending mm-hmm. on what type of show it is. But for the most part, you're talking about that time. So am I going to come in and change the system, or am I going to come in and be the guest and have a lovely time and make everybody feel, you know, feel me and remember me and do the best thing I can do? So it took a while to get to that. And I think it
sure.
takes directors a while to, especially ones who are filmmakers, you know, I mean, but they bring you in because they want you as an indie filmmaker with this rich history and, you know, I play with narrative and now I'm on a lot of bigger shows. So I know, you know, all the effects and this and that. So I'm very happy at this point because it's mm-hmm. not my show. And I really say to everybody, I love you to death. I complain all you want, but it's not my show. Right.
Exactly. Not a lot
it's
I can do.
Show.
It's not my show. I would say that to people too. Some of my friends were talking about, you know, the problems with the show, and they were like, and the amores of the 70s are not, I'm like, it's not my show. I'm just a cop. It's not my show.
It's not my show. I can't, I mean, what the thing is to make your own show. And that's, you know, what I'm really trying to do now, but it's above my pay grade too, is the other thing I was saying on before the strike when I walked out of another show. This is above my pay grade and let the mm-hmm. people, you know, come in. So, I mean, it sounds, but I would be right there rehearsing, you know, right there, you know, making some interesting blocking or, you know, talking to the cast to bring out, you know, do my little Dunier magic with them. But I was not going to go and change the system. I was going to deliver more options. Let's shoot the hand. Let's shoot the ceiling. Oh, don't forget the light. It said light there, you know, and then shoot the way the show looks, because I can't go like, oh,
exactly.
I'm
you have to
I'm
follow
a talking head.
Right. You have to sort of follow the template already established and paint within that frame. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, if I went to Bridgerton and did, you know, the Dunier mentory, like it just didn't work, you know.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It would not work. It just doesn't work. So, you know, how do you then do your thing within the confines of a show? I mean, you figure out performance, you figure out, you know, camera location, you figure out, you know, as I said, blocking. Props. I mean, directors have so much control that, you know, once you figure out like how, you know, to make them color in a show, and as you were talking about color, bring it. Bring it.
Yeah. Is there somebody in history that you would like people to know more about who was like an out Black lesbian in a time when, you know, I'm sure there's many, but is there someone that you like, oh God, that's what I want to do. That subject is a specific individual.
Right. Well, I call myself an Audrey Lordian.
Yes, and, well, good for you.
I'm an Audrey Lordian, and I've lived by, you know, her poetry. Audrey Lorde, you know, died in the early 90s, Black lesbian poet laureate of the state of New York in right 90, right before she passed from cancer. You know, lived loud and proud and doing thruples in the 50s and, you know, whatever kids are calling them, you know, she was living it then. And then being radical and defining what it means to be, have a Black feminist lesbian agenda that's about love and inclusion.
Mm. Right.
People don't know that. They know her name.
Yes.
They could pull out a quote or two, but
right.
Do they know, like, she was blind until the, you know, legally blind until the age of 5, didn't speak and until, you know, she was at a public library in Harlem, and the librarian read a book and Audrey said, I want to read. And her mom, her Caribbean West Indian mom, was just, you know, crying.
Right. So, it's a miracle.
it's a miracle.
Right. It is.
So that's the woman, I think. And I'm doing many things right now. Great things to make that a reality, to adapt one of her novels into a film.
And do you have anyone who you would like to play her?
Now, that's a hard one.
Come on, Janelle Monáe? I don't know. Who is it?
Janelle would be great. I mean, once I get it together and figure out, you know, who should be Audrey, kids are going to come popping like
without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
We'll be right back with Cheryl Dunier.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Now, how old were you when you became a mom?
33.
Me too. That's when I got my first baby too. Yeah, it was a good year that year.
It was a good
and,
year.
And was that a big decision for you? Were you in a partnership? Was it something that you just wanted to do for yourself? Or how did that come about?
So I'm going to, turn back the hands of time. When I, definitely was thinking about being queer, I always thought I was going to have a kid. And I thought it would magically happen when you turn 21. You just started having kids. I don't know where. The nuns never told us the right thing.
I'm sure.
But I definitely knew I was going to have a kid. I was always making plans. I was always sort of, thinking about what gay man and even asking them to the point of like, you got good genes, tell me, whatever. Yeah, especially during the time of AIDS, we lost so many wonderful men. Essex Hemphill was a good friend of mine. He was like somebody who was asked. He's like, no, I can't. Others. So it was always on my agenda, regardless of what I was doing. And it was just finding the right moment. And I said, all right, the moment's going to be after I do like my major big thing. Right. And that was the Watermelon Woman. And I did it right after that. And I was a one-hit wonder because I'm a gold star.
Good for you.
Right?
Good for you.
Right?
I have a lot of gold star lesbians, never been with a man. And they wear it proudly, as you should, as you should.
All right.
And do you have a son or a daughter? What do you have?
I have Simone's gender non-conforming. So they are living in Seattle with their partner, who's also a they. Just starting in the world, I would say, working as they graduated from Cooper Union in paper making.
Wow. That's a fancy art school there.
And useful paper making it is, right? So it took a while to figure out how to put that on the map. So
yeah.
Now they're in Seattle and they're, a registrar at an art center and planning to go to grad school. And so the partner I had at the same time that Simone was born, where they were like, oh, I want to do it. And so we use the same donor. And so we have a son and his name is Gabe. And he too went to a college in New York. I forgot the name of it. I'm sorry. It's also the menopausal brain. People don't
believe me, I'm with you on that, honey. You don't have to. I think I need 3 more seconds when I watch Jeopardy now. It should be over 60. You get 3 more seconds to answer
totally,
the question.
Right.
Yeah. Now, so both your kids are non-binary.
Well, Gabe is not. He's just, he hasn't really defined himself, I think. He's a gamer. So I think he has a relationship that he's trying to figure out with the world.
Understood. Well, my little one is 10, who, is so magical. She has autism. She told me right after we worked together that some of her stuffed animals were non-binary. And I was like, no kidding. I said, she was like 9 at the time. I said, and what does that mean? She says, they're not a girl and they're not a boy. And I said, okay, that's fine. That's fine with me. I said, when I was a girl, there was a thing called a tomboy. And that's what they called people who felt not like a girl and not like a boy. And she goes, so that means you're non-binary? I said, well, for me, I'm just gay. But some people, I understand non-binary. Mm-hmm. Well, now they are a they, them. I almost said she is a they, mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. But they feel so strongly about this. Mm-hmm. It's been over a year. And they recently asked all their friends and everyone else in their life besides me and one friend of hers, Judah, who lives away, to call her Clay, to call them Clay, and that they would like me and Judah to still call them Dakota. So it's so interesting to be on this journey that here I am like a lesbian icon. And my little 9-year-old says to me, Mommy, some kids in my class don't even know their own gender. I'm like, tell them to look in the mirror when they're in the shower, right? Like a typical idiot. And she says, that's your sex, not your gender. Sex is binary. Gender is infinite. She was 9, Cheryl. She was 9 years old.
Oh my goodness.
And she's kind of schooling me into readjusting my antiquated thinking and opening myself up to seeing who they are, because when a kid tells you who they are, believe them, you know, you got to believe them.
You have to. Yeah. I mean, that's our future. And that's the next gen. And we just have to be there for them, whatever, and parent them and give them what they need for the journey after us, which is going to be a hard one.
Do you remember that first love or the first time you kissed a girl? Did your head explode? Like, what was that like? Did you kiss a boy before you kissed a girl?
I think I kissed the boy, but it didn't go well.
Yeah.
It did not go
well. You were a little kid? How old were you?
I was maybe, it was the promiscuous summer, like 12 or 13. And there was some sort of like little, you know, older than me. Little boy who was sort of met in the golf course at night, that type of thing. We're all there playing games. And I was just, what are you doing? Just, I gotta go home. You know, this is boring. So escape for home. But there was, once I found, figured out my lesbianism and moved past my crush with, the Italian girl in high school, I found this older lesbian who I just, Nancy Fortino, I can't even say the name, but maybe she'll. Nancy Fortino. And she was an anarchist, and I just, at the anarchist bookshop, and she was like, I can't go out with you. I can't do anything with you because you're young. You know, come back in a year when you turn 18. So I went back in a year, and I said, are you ready? And so we had a summer little thing before I went to college, you know.
Good for you.
Yes.
Good for her for putting up that boundary, number one.
Exactly.
And number two, good for you for knowing what you wanted.
I knew what I wanted. And I knew it was something that was going to be fulfilling and that there was desire there, as well as a lifestyle that I believed in. I think that's the whole thing, too. It's like, why our younger generation is who they are. They're sewing together the politics of it. It's not just about who you sleep with, it's about how you live your life. It's about who you, value. It's a whole bunch of social mores for them to align to and feel comfortable in the world with, to find a partner. Mm-hmm. Cause you can have fun with an avatar for a long time,
Exactly. Put on that virtual reality headset they're talking about. Yeah, crazy how life really is good. So different.
Technology is the hardest thing. Yep.
It sure is. Did you fight that with your gamer son that, my kid, I think, is going to be an animator or a gamer, or it's all about that world, and the depth of knowledge is terrifying. Really what they're able to tell me is going on in the, as she says it, the object show community, because those are the kind of shows she likes where objects have little faces and they talk, but there are no people in it. That's what she wants.
Just voices.
Voices.
It could be anybody.
They call him Broccoli, or they call him Cup, and it's a little cup. And he's like, hey, how you doing? Let's walk over to the candle. And they walk over to the candle. And, hello, I'm the candle. I'm very hot. Yeah, better put you out. It's a crazy little, but they have a whole community that they're, invested in. And I took them to VidCon, which is like Comic-Con, but for YouTube stars and what she watches. And we went in there and she just got tears in her eyes. And she looked around and she said, these are my people. This is my culture. This is my culture.
That's their culture, and they understand and they seek it, and they can find it online and whatnot. So Gabe, the gamer, was at once a brony, My Little Pony.
Bella. I know that, yes.
And he also plays Magic the Gathering. And he was here at the, I was living in another place, which was very far away from the BronyCon. Mm. But I was like, I am not driving all the way out there. So he dressed up in his little Brony outfit, took BART, which is the public transportation system up here in the Bay Area, all the way to the airport, hopped on a shuttle to go to this con and play and sing, the little Brony song.
My Little Pony song. Yes.
Right. I was just like, what the? And that's when I knew he knew what, this public system is long and there are a lot of people that get on it. And so when he's dressed in a little purple, wig and blah, blah, blah. I mean, mind it, he was, in his teens at that point. But he loves all the cons. He loves, making the big sword out of paper.
Exactly. I got the con kid here too. Exactly.
Right.
Well, Cheryl, you're delightful. I really love talking to you. I could talk to you all day. I can't wait till we get to work together, and hopefully this strike will be over before we even air this podcast. So
yes, it will be over.
I hope. I really do. And thank you for talking to me. Thank you for coming on and telling everybody about you and who you are and what you do, because you're pretty phenomenal.
Oh, that's after you.
Well, thank you, my friend.
Please stick around for some questions from you, our loyal listeners.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. It was wonderful to talk with Cheryl, and let me know what you think. All right, we get some questions from you, and here's one. Hit it.
Hi, Rosie. It's Preston from Alabama. I just wanted to leave you a message and let you know how much I've enjoyed listening to your podcast. It's triggered a walk down memory lane for me. I have been rewatching like your movies, A League of Their Own, the Flintstones movie, even that Ren and Stimpy episode you did where you voiced the Barrette Beret girl. Do you remember that? and also your nephew uploading your show, your talk show to YouTube. I've enjoyed those. I used to come in the afternoons after school and watch your show with my mom. So those are super special to me. And, you know, my question's kind of about my mom. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, my mom was always so progressive-minded. She's so sweet and empathetic, sympathetic to other people. And she always raised me to believe that, you know, I'm no better than anybody else. We're all equal, no matter skin color, sexuality, you know, which was really progressive at that point in time that we were living in Alabama, especially where we live. Because as you know, in Alabama, a lot of people still have really hateful ideas of the way things should be. And it's just terrible, you know. And as a gay man, my husband and I have faced it. You know, we go out and people give us dirty looks, or, you know, we go to a restaurant, people get up and move tables. So it makes it even worse that my mom ideologically aligns herself with people that aim to hurt me and my husband, who she claims to care about. You know, and since Donald Trump's presidency, over those 4 years, and then even after now, I've tried to remind her what she always instilled in me and what she always said her beliefs were. And, you know, I really feel like she's been brainwashed, and I can't convey that to her, you know. And it just breaks my heart that she thinks the way she does now, and I don't understand it. It's just hateful. And I feel like I've kind of gotten to a place where I'm ready just to kind of give up, you know. And my husband and I have even talked about wanting to leave this place and go somewhere more progressive, so hopefully we can make that happen. But I always thought I would just stay here forever because of her, you know, and this place is just so hard to be gay in. You know, I feel like there's got to be an easier way and better place to be. And I want to just leave it all behind, I feel like. But it, like I said, at the same time, it breaks my heart to like leave my mom and just to give up on that relationship. But I mean, like I said, I wouldn't go out and be friends with the Ku Klux Klansman. So I just don't know if I can reconcile it anymore. And I don't think that she gets it. I don't know. What would you do, Rosie? My question was, I thought you lost your mom at such a young age. Do you ever wonder if you would have gotten along? And what if your mom were still around and she took a hard right MAGA turn? Like, how would you deal with that? Or, you know, if she was steadfast in those ideas and those beliefs, like, would you turn away? Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I don't know, Rosie. Help me make sense of it.
Preston, you're very, very cute. And I'm sorry that happened. I really am. There's a wonderful documentary called Fox News Brainwashed My Dad. And you have to watch that. It's exactly about this, you know, what happened when, you know, a sort of progressive family raised progressive beliefs, democratic, usually liberal, possibly. And somebody in the family does make a huge right turn. Families are hard, you know, and when you have trauma in the beginning, in the setup, in the very structure of the family, you know, it's difficult to overcome, but it's possible. It's possible, Preston. And here's what I say. It is easier to be gay in a different place than where you are. And I hope that you find a place where you and your husband can thrive and be a part of a community and feel all that love that has been missing since your mom went MAGA. I wish you nothing but luck and love, and you sound like an amazing human, and thank you very much for picking up my station here on this newfangled podcast thing. Thank you, Preston. Question number two, hit it.
Hello. I can't believe you were in London and you didn't get in touch to have our coffee. It's all right. You mentioned candy corn. I miss candy corn. Anyway, I will not go near candy corn. I don't even know what's in candy corn. Should I say candy corn again? enjoying your podcast still. And I'm thinking, what question did I have? I don't have a question. I just want to talk. Okay. Looking forward to the next Tuesday for the next podcast. And, yeah, I also feel the same about all the news going on. And I just, you know, I just stay in my head creating. And, that's it. What kind of art are you making? What are you working on? Are you sewing? Are you painting? Yeah. Share some of your artwork. Okay. Bye. Did I say it's Meryl? Bye.
Okay, Meryl, we're definitely having coffee because you're a freaking riot. I don't really have a question. I just like to talk. Well, Meryl, you've come to the right place. I, too, go off into dissociation with my artistic endeavors. I start blasting Joni Mitchell as loud as it will go, and I just paint. And sometimes it's stuff to get out of me. Sometimes it's to sort of get rid of the images that are in my head. If I paint them, then you know, they don't haunt me as much. I don't know. I sew things together, you know, like little scrapbook pages with the sewing machine sometimes. And, you know, it's like a whole lot of OCD-esque journaling and mental health hours, you know, and that's what I have to do. I would love to say I'm fine with this and everybody let's move on with our, I'm not fine with any of it. And I don't have the answers and I'm just a person and who asked me anyway. So there are smarter minds than this one that are the ones we should be listening to. And I'm looking to listen to some inspiring stuff. So yeah, make art, Meryl. Keep being you. You're very funny. Meryl, in three times with the question, way to go. If you want to leave your own voice message for me, you can send it in a voice memo to onwardrosie@gmail.com. Next week on Onward, we have the amazing Alexandra Pelosi, who just released her 15th documentary, and they're all freaking amazing. This one I absolutely loved, and I think it should be required viewing for all of America. It's called The Insurrectionist Next Door, which she produced, directed, and shot herself. She spends time with and interviews several individuals charged with crimes for participating in the January 6th attack on the Capitol, even asking some point blank, "Hey, did you go to the Capitol to assassinate my mother?" I mean, honestly, it's a mind-blowing documentary. And watch it if you can this week before Tuesday, because I think you're going to love the conversation. Alexandra Pelosi is next week with the documentary, The Insurrectionist Next Door. Hey, everybody, take care of your hearts, please, and each other. Peace.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.